Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with the last part of a page that I ended our last program with, because it's a few little funny items here. Things you never want to hear from your plumber. How critical is hot water anyway? From your accountant. Would you consider selling a kidney? From your personal trainer. I've had two clients die on this machine, so do be careful. And from your contractor. Permits, schmermits. Who needs screws when you have duct tape? Okay, moving on to AARP, the magazine, and this is under the articles about very special people. This one is a dealer finally gets his due. George R. Lee wowed the dance world and then took a sharp detour. People tell me I've been rediscovered, the first Asian American male ballet dancer, but I was never hiding. I've been here the whole time. I started dancing because of my mother. She was from Poland, and she was a professional dancer. When I was small in Hong Kong, I would watch her do her exercises. She would tell me, "Oh, you want to try? Follow me." By age 7, I was performing in a nightclub because during World War II, we had to make a living somehow. I was lucky. There were Russian people working in the club as dancers, and they would give me advice. I took professional dance classes with them. It was tough at 7 years old to keep up with the pros, but I did it. After the war, when the communists started moving into Shanghai in 1949, my mother got worried for our safety, so we left for United Nations refugee camp in a jungle in the Philippines. We were supposed to stay for 4 months. They offered my mother a chance to leave for Australia, but because I was half Chinese, I wouldn't have been allowed to go with her. So we stayed. We were stuck there for 2 years. Then America accepted us, but my mother knew I would be judged differently because of how I looked. She told me, "You've got to be 10 times better than whoever they have there." And I did the best I could. In New York, I went to the School of American Ballet, the training school for the New York City Ballet. Advanced class was easy for me because of my Russian training. At the time, George Balanchine was choreographing his Nutcracker, and when he heard there was a Chinese boy in the school, he decided to use me for the Chinese tea dance. He asked me what leaps and turns I could do, and I showed him, and he said, "Oh, that's good. You will do that." I could really jump high. I was hoping to get a permanent spot in the company, but they had an excuse. They said I was too short. It's true, I was shorter than the other men in the company. Still, I had to work. I heard that someone was looking for Asians for a Broadway show. For my audition, I did a solo from Tchaikovsky's The Sleeping Beauty. These Broadway people didn't know what the hell I was doing. But the show's director was Gene Kelly, and he liked me. After my audition, I was waiting for the elevator to go home, and he came by and said, "Why don't you take this job? You could learn something new and get paid for it." That's how I got cast in Flower Drum Song, the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, and learned jazz dance. Gene Kelly made a spot for me in one number where I could do solo jumping. From there, I danced in whatever shows I could get. I went on the road with Carol Channing as one of her 10 chorus boys. But you're not a boy forever. After a while, I would go to cattle calls and they would say, "You are great in dancing, but you're not the type." And the shows were different. They don't dance jazz like in the old days. They do a lot of wiggling. I figured the best thing was to retire from show business. This was in 1980. I was doing a show in Las Vegas, and a friend suggested I get trained as a blackjack dealer. My mother was upset at first. She thought by working in a casino, I would be involved with the mob. But it's not like that at all. Dealing is my second career. It's different from dancing, but I enjoy the life. At the casino, we all get along. We help each other out. I have bad knees now, and I can't stand up too long, so they gave me a table where I can deal sitting down. Customers come in looking for me. They're always calling me by name and are like a big family for me. A few years ago, a journalist named Jennifer Lynn contacted me. She had heard about me dancing for Balanchine, and she wanted to make a short documentary about me. The film was released this year, and it has been great. I'm really proud. Because of the film, I have gotten to see a lot of my old friends from the dance world. I have gotten to think about and talk about everything that happened to me, things I had forgotten. I'm glad things are different now. There are more opportunities for dancers who don't fit the mold. But I'm happy. I have a roof over my head. I've worked all my life, and I'm still working. And this article was as told to Leslie Quander Wooldridge. George R. Lee, 89, a blackjack dealer at the Four Queens Casino in Las Vegas, is the subject of the new documentary, 10 Times Better. And one more, real people, A Dog's Tale, how Scout found his people, in his own words. This hound had to run away to find his forever home. The question I'm asked most often is, how'd you do it? How'd you scale 2 chain link fences at animal control, cross a busy highway in the middle of the night, and find your way into a nursing home a quarter mile away? Let's just say I was born to jump, and I've learned to get what you want in this life. Sometimes you've got to break the rules. Remember, this is the dog speaking. But the bigger question is, why here? What made me pick the Meadow Brook Medical Care Facility on that night back in 2017? And when I was caught and returned to the shelter, what made me escape again and go right back? And then once more, the very same week? The short answer is, Meadow Brook has an automatic front door and a very, very cozy couch in their front lobby. It felt safe, something I hadn't felt in a long time. I don't want to get into my backstory. I've been through some rough times before I got here. I've still got BB gun pellets lodged in my jowls. Not all humans are kind, but the ones in this place are. The nursing home's administrator, Marna Robertson, decided to adopt me after my third jailbreak. I think she realized I would just keep coming back until she did, and the residents welcomed me like I was one of their own. I know which rooms have snacks for me. I'm partial to Ritz crackers. And which residents don't mind being woken up at midnight with a wet nose on their forehead. Some keep treats in the baskets of their walkers. But I'm no freeloader. My friend Jimmy Martinet, of the household coordinator for the residence unit where I live, likes to tell people that I think I have a job. No, Jenny, I don't think I have a job. I know I have one. I do security. No visitor gets in or out without going through me, and I'm not afraid to bark. I also make regular rounds to check on all the residents. I'm excellent at opening doors. I like to be where the people are. What can I say? They've actually changed a few knobs around here because of that. On my rounds, I give everybody attention, but I try to spend more time with people who are feeling poorly. Jenny says it's like I was trained to give comfort to people. It's not training, though. It's just what makes sense to me, because this is my family now, and family looks out for family. The world is unpredictable, and life isn't always fair. But my story shows that if you find your people, you'll be okay. So keep looking until you find them. And this story was as told to Eric Spitznagel. According to DNA testing, Scout, 9, is a mix of many breeds, including Labrador Retriever and Chow Chow. He lives in Bel Air, Michigan. And now, from AARP, The Bulletin, in the news, delaying Stairway to Heaven. So we have a couple of short items here. A study of nearly 500,000 people found those who climbed the most stairs had a 24% lower risk of dying from any cause and a 39% lower risk of death by cardiovascular disease. The study, by European Society of Cardiology, was published by Science Daily. Protections for retiree investments strengthened. Financial advisors giving investment guidance to those saving for retirement will have to act solely in the best interest of clients under a Labor Department rule finalized in late April. Advisors to those with individual retirement accounts, 401ks, and similar plans will be considered fiduciaries who are prohibited from boosting their bottom lines by steering savers toward retirement products that may not best fit the client's needs. This rule closes legal loopholes that allowed some advisors to recommend investments with excessive fees and unnecessary risks, which cost retirement savers billions of dollars a year, says Nancy LeMond, AARP's Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. The new rule builds on a Securities and Exchange Commission regulation that sets the best interest standard for advice on purchasing securities such as mutual funds. The rule features additional provisions that expand the best interest standard to cover advice given on a one-time basis, such as whether to roll over a 401k into an individual retirement account, IRA, or annuity, which would also come under the best interest standard. It also covers advisors' recommendations to employers on what investments to include in workplace retirement plans. The final version of the rule was scheduled to take place, or will take place, on September 23rd. Does your state Social Security benefits? Or does your state tax Social Security benefits? West Virginia lawmakers this spring passed a law eliminating state taxes on Social Security benefits, with a 35% reduction for 2024 and the rest phased out by 2026. AARP state offices have worked with legislators across the country to eliminate taxes on Social Security. Missouri and Nebraska ended them for 2024, leaving just 10 states, including West Virginia, that tax some or all of their residents' Social Security income. Here's a look at where the taxes still exist. Montana, Minnesota, Utah, Colorado, Kansas, New Mexico, West Virginia, Vermont, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. Weight loss drug okayed to treat heart disease. Food and Drug Administration has approved the use of the weight loss drug Wegovy for overweight people with heart disease. The move will allow Medicare Part D to pay for Wegovy for people whose doctors recommend it for cardiovascular treatment. Medicare already covers the cost of Ozempic, another popular weight loss drug, when it's used to treat diabetes. Medicare Part D, which pays for many prescription drugs, is especially excluded by a 2003 law from paying for drugs prescribed for weight loss or weight gain, as well as drugs used for fertility, hair growth, and treatment for sexual or erectile dysfunction. More than 40% of Americans 60 plus are obese, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, and type 2 diabetes. A survey from the Business Group on Health found that 92% of large employer health plans covered the drugs for diabetes in 2023 and 46% for weight loss. And finally, from this page, Alzheimer's drug costly to Medicare. Treatment brings hope and big price tag. The drug Leqembi shows promise for patients with early-stage Alzheimer's disease, but supplying it will cost Medicare an estimated $3.5 billion next year, officials say. Leqembi has been covered by Medicare since the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, gave it unconditional approval as a treatment for Alzheimer's last summer, after it showed promise in halting progression of the disease in its early stages. Because it is administered intravenously in a doctor's office or other outpatient setting, it is covered by Part B rather than Part D prescription drug coverage. Both original Medicare and Medicare Advantage plans currently cover Leqembi for eligible patients. But the FDA's approval came after Medicare Advantage plan rates were set for the year. Spending for MA plans is not affected by Leqembi costs in 2024, but those are part of the $3.5 billion cost projections for 2025. The drug is subject to the 20% Part B coinsurance, which could be covered by a Medigap policy or other supplemental plan. Out-of-pocket costs can differ under Medicare Advantage plans. Before Medicare covers it, you must meet requirements. Be diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment and have documented evidence of beta amyloid plaque on the brain. You must use a physician who participates in a qualifying registry with a clinical team and follow-up care. Despite the high cost estimates, there may not be a huge impact on Part B premiums in 2025, says Juliet Kubanski, Deputy Director of Medicare Policy for RKFF, formerly the Kaiser Family Foundation. I know $3 billion might sound like a lot, but it might not actually translate into a noticeable increase in the Part B premium, though it could be one factor among many if we do see a higher Part B premium next year, Kubanski says. Now, also from AARP, the bulletin, older voters will decide. Election 2024 hangs on the diverse attitudes of Americans over 50. This is In the News, a special report. It has become a political truism that older voters, because of their numbers and their dedication to making it to the polls, decide elections at every level, from the White House to city and county councils. But what matters to them this year seems to vary as much as at any time in recent memory, and no party or candidate appears to have a lock on their hearts. For Mike Britt, 67, of Edmond, Oklahoma, the November elections are about dollars and cents. He's been hit hard by rising prescription drug prices and inflation. Like others on a fixed income, Britt, a retired insurance auditor, notices each time property taxes, groceries, and gasoline prices go up, especially since he drives nearly 200 miles each way to Texas and back to check on his mother, whom he and a sister help pay basic bills. She has about the same amount coming in, but costs keep going up, Britt says. Robert Fulkerson, 60, of Reno, Nevada, is focused on a more abstract vision, the future of the planet. He can still recall the song he and his classmates sang on the first Earth Day in 1970 as they cleaned up trash. It sparked a lifetime of environmentalism that carries forward to this year's election. Fear motivates some older voters this election cycle. We're about the only country in the world that doesn't control immigration, says Pam L., a 78-year-old from Nevada, who participated in an AARP focus group last fall on election concerns. Parentheses, last name of those in the focus group were kept confidential. Now that terrorism is going on, it's not safe for the American people, and nobody seems to care about that. These and other concerns will be on the minds of older voters when they enter the ballot booth. And since presidential elections have been so close in recent years, candidates seek the right formula to motivate a small sliver of the electorate that could prove decisive, says Bruce Oppenheimer, professor emeritus of political science at Vanderbilt University. Older voters are a remarkably stable group, Oppenheimer says. It might take more to move them than those who do not have a long attachment to a political party. How the economy affects people personally matters most, AARP found after hearing from women 50 and older for a survey. Of women who work, 54% said they are not confident they will have enough money to retire when they would like. 41% of the retired women said they weren't doing as well financially as they expected. You can always count on older voters to be concerned about the economy, and in their world, it's Social Security and Medicare, says Nancy LeMond, AARP Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer. And those are reliably the most important issues to older voters, no matter what election year it is. Other surveys and polls confirm that. A Pew Research Center poll early this year found that strengthening the economy was the top issue for 4 out of 5 people 50 to 64 years old. Making Social Security fiscally sound was important to 77% of voters 65 plus, ranking third in a tie with immigration, but after terrorism and the economy. For those aged 50 to 64, 73% list Social Security after the economy and defending against terrorism. A 54-year-old Arizona independent voter from an AARP focus group said medical deductibles and copays, along with high prices for goods, take a toll. It's just ridiculous. You go to the store, everything is expensive, said Gurley G. High prescription drug prices were also a concern for many. Britt says his wife has a migraine-inducing rare illness that racks up high prescription bills of $1,100 monthly for one drug alone. There has to be some way they can lower these drug prices. They're just exorbitant, he said. The polarized nature of politics has an impact on what voters see as important, said Beth Rickenbach, associate professor of psychology at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. Immigration is one example. Nearly twice as many Republican voters as Democrats said it was important. Crime also is a much hotter issue for Republicans than Democrats. And Democrats were more concerned than Republicans about climate change and environmental issues. In one focus group, a Republican woman said she was so frustrated with politicians' dysfunction and polarization that she would like to give Congress a good talking to. She would tell lawmakers to set aside their pet projects and re-election concerns and focus on ethics and working together. Caregiving was on the minds of voters. About 87% of women support paid family leave benefits for caregivers, the AARP poll found. Women in the focus group said they felt their caregiving work was undervalued. A 55-year-old caregiver named Kelly M. of Nevada said, "For somebody like myself that had to give up their jobs so they could take care of their parents and not get paid for it, what are you going to do about us?" LeMond says consciousness about the topic is growing. They look to public officials to show they understand their day-to-day challenges and that they are addressing them. Then there's the matter of age. President Joe Biden will be 82 in November, and former President Donald Trump turns 78 this month. This issue was from June, I will say. How will older voters respond to candidates who are, in many cases, older than them? Oppenheimer says there is no data to suggest that older voters find a candidate too old to serve. As for the media focus on age, do they find that a grain of truth or offensive? One thing experts agree on is the older vote will be decisive. Nearly two-thirds of the electorate was 50 or older in the 2022 midterm elections, according to a July 2023 Pew Research Center report. Post-election data shows 53% of the electorate was 50-plus in the last presidential election. Nobody has to cajole them into going to the polls, and yet you don't see campaigns talking that much about focusing on older voters, LeMond says. AARP is working throughout the election cycle to educate voters and candidates. We want to make sure those running for office understand the range of concerns of older voters, she said. We don't want them taken for granted. After all, in an election that could be very close, she says, they could very well decide who takes office. Tamara Lytle is a veteran political reporter whose work has been published in The Washington Post, The Orlando Sentinel, and many other news outlets. She was the author of this piece. Now let's go back to AARP, the magazine, for the few minutes we have left and look at a happy birthday for Penelope Cruz. It was April 28th. For three decades, the Spanish actor has dazzled audiences with roles in dramatic films including Vanilla Sky, Victory Christina Barcelona, and in 2023's Ferrari. Her early years, Cruz studied classical ballet at the Madrid Royal Conservatory and landed her first acting roles as a teen. "I used to pray every night when I was a little girl, 'Please, God, don't lock me in an office,'" she told Variety earlier this year. "If I cannot release everything that is going on here, I know I would lose my mind." A life-changing moment? When Cruz was 19, she did volunteer work in India and met Mother Teresa. "She talked to me about the importance of trying to help someone else every single day," Cruz told Harper Bazaar's Home Life. Cruz met her husband, Javier Bardem, when they co-starred in the Spanish romance Yamon Yamon, 1992. They have two children and have appeared in five films together. So here's more milestone birthdays. Ken Jennings, May 23rd, the Jeopardy host's latest book is called A Comedic Travel Guide to the Afterlife. Russell Crowe, April 7th, between films, the Oscar-winning actor tours with his band, Indoor Garden Party. He's 60. Ken Jennings is 50. Jackie Chan, April 7th, the actor and martial artist will appear with Ralph Macchio in a new Kate Kidd film. He's 70. Jerry Seinfeld, April 29th, the comedian's collection of cars is said to include more than 40 Porsches. He's 70. Gladys Knight, May 28th, the beloved R&B singer continues her worldwide farewell tour this year. She's 80. Jane Goodall, April 3rd, the famous primatologist is the subject of recent documentary Reasons for Hope, and she's 90. Well, moving on to a few things that you never knew about your brain, we're on actually number 88. Did you know that a decline in verbal skills could be an early sign of Alzheimer's disease? 89. Did you know that a woman's risk of developing dementia increases in her 80s? Number 90. Did you know that musical memories often outlast verbal memories in Alzheimer's patients? 91. Optimistic older people live longer than pessimists. And 92, alcohol affects older brains more strongly because of lower metabolic rates. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. To be sure and listen at the same time next week, I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.